And welcome to Tabletop Radio Hour, your podcast for everything tabletop. My name's Zach, and this week I've got my co-host Mark. Mark, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Zach?
I'm fantastic today. Today is a very special episode because we have a guest host with us. We have Logan. Logan, Hello. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good.
How are you guys?
Okay.
Nice. I'm good. Today we're going to have a regular talk show episode. So I think we'll just kind of go ahead and get started. First things first, Logan, go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
All right. I found you guys through Reddit, and there was a little blurb about, hey, you know, let's get some more hosts on here. And so I figured I'd apply. But my background as far as gaming goes back from when I was a young kid, and I could hear people doing role play in my house and kind of just listening in and just always intrigued with it and then just steadily getting involved with it. As I got older, you know, a little bit in high school and then exploded after that, a range of different role play systems all the way from random one-page RPGs to, you know, more modern, well-known stuff, D&D and whatnot. Just all over the gambit as far as role play goes.
So who were you listening to play? Was that your parents? Or
yeah, my parents were playing. They had friends over and stuff like that. So it was just something I always kind of heard. I like to listen to stories, you know?
Amazing. Absolutely. Nice.
Do you know what they were playing at the time?
At the time, it was a homebrew version of AD&D. Based on that, but kind of twisted when I look back on it, you know, definitely a lot of home rules and other things. I remember having those books around all the time, the AD&D books, the classic, red idol, you know, getting an eye pried out of it by some thieves and, you know, Dungeon Master's Guide with a big red demon on there and that sort of stuff, you know?
Yeah, the classic.
Classic. Yes. Classic. Yes. Not quite Redbox classic, but very old.
But pretty close to it.
Yeah. I wasn't sure how much we want to talk about certain systems and stuff, but from there it was kind of a jump away from the D&D world in high school. There was an anime role play system that I was involved with that I saw some friends in. So I started trying to figure that out. And then some friends brought me into a lot of the White Wolf stuff, which was a big flip from class-based and, you know, slogging through dungeons to very narrative and very flexible systems. So that was kind of a nice mind opener. And then from there, it just kind of blew up all kinds of different places.
Absolutely.
Neat.
Yeah, I swear most people in gaming have experience with White Wolf stuff, and I'm very sad that I haven't played any yet.
I think it's very much based on the group you're with, you know, because I've seen some really good situations. I've seen some really bad situations with the White Wolf stuff. It's very flexible, which is good and bad.
Absolutely. Nice. Well, Logan, thank you for joining us today. I'm excited for this episode, and I think we'll just hop in. You brought a couple topics today.
Logan. Yeah, I guess I did.
So good for you. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me. I guess I was just excited.
Good.
Excited to be here.
No, absolutely. There's nothing wrong with being excited about talking to your fellow gamers in the world.
Heck yeah.
It's true.
The first one you brought to our attention was very interesting because this isn't something that we have a ton of experience with. Mm. So we kind of want to hear your thoughts on it. And it's about sports and games and RPGs.
Yeah, no, it's one of those topics I threw out there because I think it's a weird niche. You know, most roleplay games, they have some sort of conflict system for combat. That's very simple. That's where I think, you know, die rolling and randomization in a role play started. Is it was a combat game. Let's keep combat going while we think about what these people are doing and thinking. And then outside of that, most systems have some sort of like, I'm going to try and convince the guard that I can walk past him, you know, some sort of social interaction. But there's not usually like a high end risky situation like combat that's not combat, you know? So how can you use games, or how can you use sports, or how can you use something else inside of the game?
Actually, you know, I talked about this on the show. One of the original games I've played, and I played this with Zach, is the James Bond role-playing game. Mm-hmm. And in that one, gambling is very much a part of the game. Oh, and there cool. are a lot of rules for various gambling games. And as a matter of fact, they have a couple different, I think poker and craps maybe, or maybe
some blackjack. 21,
blackjack. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You know, just a couple of various games with slightly different rules to give each a different flavor. But that's a great way of having your hero sit down with a villain and have a conflict with them. That's yeah. not just about killing them right away.
Now, what's the mechanic they use in that James Bond game? What are they? Is it a dice, or are they actually pulling out the cards, or?
No, it's dice. It's basically a skill roll. Okay. And then there's a different chart for quality of success. Mm-hmm. So that's how you rate and compete. It's also a game that doesn't have, traditionally, it doesn't have a large group of players. You don't have a large party. It works best okay. with either one-on-one or maybe two agents at the most. So mm-hmm. that offers an opportunity to get into that sort of thing without having a huge melee of card playing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mechanics.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And Mark, I was going to agree with you with that because, we have played, you know, a good amount of one-on-one James mm-hmm. Bond stuff.
Yeah.
But like even thinking back on even with 5th edition D&D, they have a, you know, a specific kind of in genre kind of poker style game mm-hmm. that they have created, you know, additionally. So that's something you can bring into your sessions as well with an actual kind of quote unquote D&D poker game.
Am I remembering this correctly? Is somebody working on a Harry Potter role-playing game? I don't think it's out yet if it is
being
developed. But that would be something, you know, Quidditch is an obvious part of that narrative.
I don't know about the role-play game, but I do know that people have done, you know, a Harry Potter-type role-play game in other role-play systems.
Sure.
But speaking of Quidditch specifically, there was actually a Kickstarter that just ended like a month or two ago. That had a that was just basically the Quidditch as a board game. They had the hoops, they had miniatures on stands, and like the sure. stretch goals had Harry Potter and other, you know, cool miniatures to add in there and stuff like that. Yeah. But it was all four of the houses, little Quidditch okay. team game setup.
Nice. But well, there was really cool. there was Blood Bowl too, mm-hmm. which was
was that
with Warhammer or
yeah, that's
was
a Games that Workshop a... piece. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Blood Bowl is something I played a lot of. I'm actually currently in a league right now through Blood Bowl 2 we're playing. But the new rule set has just dropped basically back in December, I want to say. Not more than a month ago. New rule set dropped for an expansion on that game. And for people who don't know what Blood Bowl is, it's literal fantasy football. as in you were playing yeah. elves yeah. and orcs and dwarves. And it's kind of football-esque in that you're moving a ball from one side of the field to the other, probably closer to rugby if you're really close on the rules. I'm actually not a sports guy at all, so these are just things I've been told as far as it being close to rugby or you know, missing parts from football itself, American football.
Nice.
But it's a fairly engaged tactical game. Some people call it like an introduction to other tabletop war games because it's got a very mm-hmm. specific grid and, you know, specific directions you can go. It's not as maybe complex as having to worry about armor saves and shield saves and, you know, ammo and all this other stuff that a lot of tabletop mm-hmm. war games have.
Nice.
I've played just a little bit of Blood Bowl.
Yeah?
I think I played it at a con.
Nice.
For like 30 minutes or something. You know, it was fun.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely dumb. You know, so much fun. I mean, when you can have a troll on the field pick up a goblin player that it's playing with and try and throw it at somebody else to knock them over. But in the middle of that throw, he's got to make a roll to make sure he doesn't eat the goblin. Yeah, it's just dumb. It's great.
Yeah, it's a bunch of crazy chaos.
Yep. But that's the hard thing, like in an RPG setting, there are really cool rule sets out there, like Blood Bowl, like this new Quidditch game, like the different card games and stuff like that we talked about. But how much of that is too much of a distraction from your roleplay session, you know? And how much is just, I roll a die, okay, I rolled better, cool, my hand was better, is too boring, you know, in an RPG session.
Right. Yeah, and I think kind of going back to the James Bond role-playing game, mm-hmm. it's kind of like what Mark said. You know, you're doing this while you're having like a social interaction, maybe with a villain, maybe with another person of interest. So it's something that you can add to your session that can help. Maybe just you're not just rolling dice and you know, just in a social interaction every session. You know, it adds something new and something fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, it's kind of like mass combat. It's kind of, to me, it's something that's going on while hopefully the players are doing something more with more agency to their specific mission or quest.
Yeah. Yeah. Mass combat's one of those that's very hard to work out in a satisfying way, because some people want to have more of the mass combat. I'm moving my block of troops, and others are like, I don't care about that. Let's sneak in the castle on the side, you know, and it's a real hard balance to give it something that's interesting without slogging through a literal 2 days of warfare.
Exactly right. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
No, I completely agree.
With sports and with games in a game, I've played with, you know, the die roll situation, comparing dice. I've played with actually using cards, which was kind of interesting in like a Roll 20 format, because you can actually use a deck of cards in there, and you can upload your own images for cards. So there's some options there. Right. But it still has to be a simple enough card game that people can learn it in like a minute and feel like there's something also interesting about it, you know, something that's fitting for the world.
Right.
Or there's like the other side of things.
It has
like,
to be satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Now, Zach, have we played Capers? I know we've talked about it.
We've talked about it, and we've also read through it, probably made a character or two, you know, what we do.
That's a game that, if you don't know, it uses a deck of cards instead of dice.
Oh, nice.
For its mechanic. And I want to say that it has rules where, you know, you have a deck of cards, you're basically using the deck of cards to play some real quick gambling type scenarios.
Yeah, I've liked it when people have incorporated other mechanics in a game system. You know, cards is a common one for anything that's Old West, started with Deadlands. Mm-hmm. You have that feeling in there. I think the cards are more used for the spellcaster in there, the huckster, more than just everybody else. Mm-hmm. But even like D&D had a soiree into that with the saga system back in, I want to say, the 90s or so, where they used a deck of cards for your hand and you could kind of cheat what was going on.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was interesting. You see all these kind of tropes go in and out with different game systems. And it's really interesting seeing which ones stick and which ones kind of fizzle out with time, you know?
Yeah, for sure. True.
Games that use those different, you know, gameplay elements to kind of spice up your gameplay sessions, you know, is really helpful. And I think, you know, the way that these quote unquote sports and games are, you know, resolved, whether that be a die roll or actually getting cards or whatever, I think that kind of depends on what you're trying to get at with your, you know, with your campaign or one shot or whatever you're doing.
I think there's a hard thing too with your group. What does your party want and what do they understand, you know, within that game? I actually took Blood Bowl and converted it to play for a Star Wars one-off, called it Hyper Ball, because I was running a game for two friends and we all play Blood Bowl and we couldn't decide if we want to play Blood Bowl or play like X-Wing miniatures or try to do some role play. And I'm like, you know what? Let's do all of it. That was dumb, but it was fun. It was super fun.
Because that's what matters.
Yep.
That's what matters. And I think that's what those different elements of, you know, gambling, whether it be in 007 or, you know, just, you know, a blood bowl, kind of hack into something else. I think it's all about having fun and you know, changing things up and maybe not doing the exact same thing this session that you did last session.
And I think I can agree with that for sure. Changing things up is a key point. You know, if you've been doing a lot of, you know, heavy combat or like hard, you know, rough moments where like the big bad guys really crushed your heroes down or something like that, and they come back to town and there's a carnival and they could just kind of do some silly stuff. And yeah, there's contests. There's like some sort of hammer bell or knife throw or, you know, rope ladder or something like that. You know, how do you make those mechanics interesting so they're challenging, but it's totally just silly. You spend a silver, you might gain 2 silver, woo, or whatever, you know, something like that. Something that brings levity, but still has engagement where they're rolling dice and they don't have to think as much, but they can have some fun. And then that allows the role play to kind of come about and they can talk about whatever crap they just went through because it was really hard, but now they're just playing a game and it's fun.
And you can do that with combat, you know, just have, you're just doing a sparring duel or something.
Right.
You know, you're not dueling to the death. You're just having a little demonstration of your fighting technique and just kind of do a playful combat. But like you say too, it adds even more if you can do something different than what you're already doing. You already do plenty of combat. If you can change that into a sport or a game or something, it just gives a whole other layer of what you're experiencing.
I think you just hit it right there, Mark. I think that's exactly the magic moment, is how do you sportify combat? And then the system's already made for you because you already have combat, but how do you make it a little more funny in sport? And, you know,
exactly right. Yes.
There you go.
Exactly. Nice. Like we kind of started off our 7th C campaign with, introducing my character, who is a brawler, you know, uses his fists.
Pugilism,
and, you know, doing boxing match, you know, a boxing match to introduce the character.
Yep.
That's, you know, that's how we did that.
Yes. So,
you know, plot points, narrative points, you know, that can be a good way to get in those sports and games too. Cause it's like, it's not a super important moment, you know, but like it adds to, you know, maybe that character's development a little bit more.
And that's a great vignette to show who your person is without any stakes, really. I mean, maybe social stakes or money stakes, but he's not going to die on character creation because you failed the role or something.
Absolutely not. Yeah, true. I agree.
That's fun.
I think we'll switch gears and switch topics here. Logan, take it away. Go for it.
Oh, okay.
You brought topics.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, you asked
we're gonna
for
put
them,
you to work.
So I'm going to throw out some random ideas.
No, absolutely. Go for it.
So the next one I had sent to you guys was the purpose of rules. And more so, you know, how can rules be useful to help you with the role play you want? Or maybe like, when is crunch a good thing? Having listened to your guys' podcast a bit, I haven't caught up on everything, but I've listened to, you know, a good dozen or so episodes. And some of the role play ones, there definitely is a leaning away from crunchy rules and a leaning towards more of that role play narrative interaction, which I think is really good. You know, you can get caught up on rules too much, but I also like having rules. Like, I think it's still a game. And if there were no rules at all, I'm either playing in an improv troupe or I'm writing a book, you know, like. I like having some game in there. So when are rules good and when are mechanics and crunch like beneficial as opposed to a hazard? It was kind of where I was going on that.
It's interesting. This kind of ties with the other topic, you know, talking about, adding some sport as kind of a lighter form of that kind of ties to this. But I agree with you. I think, you know, we do a lot of narrative stuff, but I still have a craving every now and then for some crunch, for something with some meat to it as well. And I think part of our problem is we like having such a smorgasbord of different stuff
that
it makes us hard to really delve into anything with too much complication. So finding easier systems to bounce around helps a lot, but
definitely we're getting to that side of production quality side of things. I'm perfectly fine with that, but just finding those systems that are easier to grasp, because we're most likely going to use it for a one shot
right.
or a small series.
Yeah.
We don't want to get so invested in something that it takes us 2 weeks to learn how to play it. And then we do, you know, 2 30-minute, 45-minute episodes.
And then it's gone.
So it's a kind of a balancing act when we're trying to figure out what games we're going to play.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the crunchier games we play are, you know, are easier to play because we play them through a game interface like Roll20 or we've been playing on Fantasy Grounds recently.
Mm. True.
So it's kind of like some of that crunch is taken out, but we still get to play that crunchy game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You're taking what is there and just lightened it a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes
automated
sense.
As much as possible.
Yeah, I've had a hard time when a game goes fully no crunch. Like there's I barely touched way back Amber Diceless, and that to me was very frustrating because it was so loose and freeform that I found there was a lot of dead air moments. And if there wasn't dead air, then after a little bit of playing, you know, if it's completely based on what the players and that player and GM, I guess Amber doesn't really have a some sort of GM or DM or narrator. Whatever they can think of at that moment, and it becomes very repetitive almost. It's like very rote because I'm just used to what I'm used to saying and doing and playing, and there's not really much there to shake it up to get you out of your own path of thought, you know, and that's what I like with systems that have that.
I think there's a weird mechanic that I can't really put my finger on, but there's a point between useful crunch and not useful crunch. Yeah. I'm trying to think of probably the least crunchy game we've played, which is probably Ghostbusters.
No. I have a less crunchy game for you.
Okay.
Well, it is a very, very small, a one-page RPG known as the Terrible RPG.
Okay, you're right. Yeah, that's probably that
terrible.
That was probably the simplest. Yeah.
That is the simplest game. Do you know that game?
Not at all. No.
So it is by a man who we've spoken to on the podcast before, Jim McClure, over at Third Act Publishing, and it's a free one page RPG called The Terrible RPG, and your character creation is taking a sheet of paper and writing down whatever six abilities you want. Stats, abilities, whatever, whether that be pickpocketing or mischief or, you know, whatever you can think of. It's literally whatever you can think of.
Okay.
And then instead of rolling dice or anything else, you you literally take your character sheet and you tear out individual letters of the skill.
Oh, gosh.
In order to accomplish it.
Wow.
It was a lot of fun. We did a buddy cop film kind of one shot situation, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
but
and I think that's perfect for a one shot situation. I think where it becomes hard is when you play anything past a one shot. There's a lot of really fun, silly games like that that are great for a one off. You know, beer and pretzels. Let's just be silly.
Yeah,
but anything long campaign, which is what I seem to get myself into too often, it's hard to keep going with something like that.
Going back to Ghostbusters, though, that one had, that is something that I have played an actual campaign with.
Mm.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a very, very simplistic game. But I feel like there is almost a step beyond that. And maybe it's because Ghostbusters is such a recognizable franchise.
Mm.
Yeah. You know what you're getting into. You know what you're doing. But maybe if you took that into something that was a little less fleshed out, it might be a little bit more daunting.
Yeah. You know, the thing, I think a lot of this stuff is, you know, that we're talking about is kind of directly connected to the comedy genre. And those games really benefit from a less crunchy system because it's all about having fun and you know, making a laugh.
It that's a good point too, though. But a lot of times when you're role playing, a lot of the comedy comes from anachronistic humor and humor that actually breaks the conventions of the genre you're playing, which if you're playing something light and fluffy and, you know, you don't care, you want to Mel Brooks it up.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that. That can be a great time. Right. But if you want into something with a lot of world building that you really do want characters immersed in, not having that level of immersion can be detrimental to it.
And that comedy sort of interaction, I think, is very much based on your game group. You know, if you know each other and very comfortable, I don't care what system you're playing, you're going to be cutting up and giving each other crud.
Of course.
Like, definitely going to be taking the piss out of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you, and, you know, humor within character is, mm-hmm. that's role playing. That's what it's all about. But I think a lot of the humor is taken outside of the role playing, especially in a situation where the rules or world have less weight to it.
So going back to some of what I was starting the topic here with, about where does crunch help and aid? I remember listening to a DM on YouTube talking about some Japanese RPGs, and he was talking about like the relationship components that are built into that style of RPG, which is very different than what we see in our standard Western styles, you know, D&D, Pathfinder, Star Wars stuff, whatever else not. And there they had like a relationship component where you roll when you first meet another character in the game. And so it would be something like, Akira-san, good to see you. And then you'd roll. You are my sworn enemy. And then the other person in response would also roll. And they'd be like, Kiyama-san, indeed, it is good to see you. And they would roll. We are in love. And it totally add this really weird dynamic because you're not sure how to deal with it. But you have to deal with both sides of that. And every character would have a connection somehow to the other ones. So that was a very weird crunch that actually really aided in the role play in a nice way.
Yeah. Because cool. those moments are what make or break a game session, you know? Because it's like those moments are so confusing at the time. But then when you play through it, you realize, you know, you had a blast doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it was so much different than what you normally do.
And it stretched your acting mind. It stretched your improv. You know, it stretched what you'd usually do.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Very nice.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. Crunchy games are, you know, kind of a teetering point because they can go so wrong so fast.
Right.
I mean, I know we played the DC game recently, which was pretty crunchy.
True.
And we got into some situations where the Flash wasn't doing too good. But again, it was a solo situation and I had nobody helping me. So
Yeah, it's inevitable. A different world when you're playing one-on-one for sure. Like you got to have some friends or some help or something like that. And things can definitely flip very quickly.
True. But I think, you know, for me, I'm all about the pacing. And I think there's a weird, difficult balance between crunch and crunch that slows you down. If you're in a high octane, adrenaline pumping situation, you have to stop and spend 20 minutes looking through charts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It can take that away from that feeling.
It's got to be intuitive in some ways, something where you can feel it out. Because if you got to stop and open a book, it's just not going to work, right?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I really like in the new Pathfinder 2nd edition, I haven't played it, I've just looked at rules. There is a mechanic in there where instead of it being like, I have a move action and then I have my like attack action, it's you have like action points. And basically you spend like, from what I understand it, I haven't played it, so full disclosure here. But you can spend one movement point or one action point to move, or two or three, and they have different effects. Same thing with like a spell. So I can cast a spell, and if I only want to spend one action point, it's like a little effect. But if I want to spend all three action points, then it's a much bigger effect, which sounds really neat. But man, are there some rules on that. And like, second edition, I'll probably never play it, to be honest, because most of the groups I play with don't want to get into that much crunch. And I'm not sure if I do, but I love the feeling of that that concept of I can use different things. You know, especially in like a standard fantasy D&D Pathfinder RPG, where you're sitting there like, cool, I'm in combat. And I can't move. All I can do here is attack. So what am I using the other part of my turn for? Like being able to use that for something else feels nice.
Well, that's a that's a great point too. Is, you know, combat is, let's face it, combat is 90% of where rules come into play anyway for most games. And I think a lot of times for crunch, a lot of it comes down to having combat options. 7C, for example.
Oh yeah.
Great option. Talk about that, Mark.
Have you heard of this game? You might have heard of this game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, yeah, I'm a big fan. I started playing 7C on first edition a long time back. And then when the Kickstarter came out, I was a supporter on that. And then I jumped on the Kitai Kickstarter, and I'm still waiting.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting.
Yeah, so are we.
With tears. I've got a few of the books. I really like the 7C mechanic there, as you brought up, for combat. Because, you know, if you are using the dueling styles and the fencing schools, it does feel like you've got different things you can do. You can feint, lunge, and parry, and all these, you know, neat mechanics.
Exactly. And I think, you know, any mechanic or rule system that you're using that offers that kind of multiple options.
Yes.
It's giving you something other than just, I roll my fighter skill again. I roll fighter.
Right. You
know. And then you're expected to maybe make it narratively more flashy, but.
Yeah, anybody can choose to describe, but it's hard to think about that when I have to think about this other thing over here, and what do I want to do next, and how do I want to not actually die here? You know?
Right.
Like, when the system can aid that. One of my. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and let's be honest, some gamers have a harder time with that than others.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Oh yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you could be a very analytical sort of person, and stopping to think about eloquent language just doesn't jibe in your brain. You're not an English major. You work on computers or whatever. Like, that's totally fine. There's gotta be something in this game to aid you. Not everybody's going to be a, you know, professional GM. Are you guys professionals?
Exactly.
I don't know. I think we are. Sure.
Hey.
We played enough. We'll play things. Let's go.
I'm still waiting for my paycheck. So.
Right. Yeah, me too.
That I'm waiting for my certificate in the mail.
Checks in the mail. That's what they keep telling me.
That's right.
So I think one of my favorite systems, I was talking about this with Mark earlier, is the Fantasy Flight Games Star Wars systems. Edge of the Empire is where most people think of it as. So Fantasy Flight Edge or whatnot. But I love that game system. Hey, I'm a Star Wars nerd for sure. But the system itself is designed, built into the dice, to have the yes and or no but built into how you roll and how you play.
Nice.
If you're unfamiliar with the system, it uses its own proprietary dice, which you can either use regular D12s, D8s, and D6s and convert, or you can use their dice, which have symbols on all of those sides. And you roll, and whatever you roll, you're going to have, you know, success or failure, but you also have advantage or disadvantage. And then there's possibilities of a triumph, which is like critting, or despair.
Right.
You can fail and still have a triumph. You can succeed and still have a despair, and something goes really wrong. You can still have advantage and disadvantage. So it's really nice, because it's not like, cool, I try and attack the guy with my blaster, and I miss. Next. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I miss, but you got three advantages, so how do you want to use those? Well, my bolt goes wide and hits the door and starts to close it. Awesome. You change that scene. You know, and the fact that it's built right there, one roll, and you got things that are going to help, like, boost your own role play and your own story. I love that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. That sounds wonderful. I personally haven't played the Edge of Empire stuff, but I've read a good amount of it.
Nice.
I think most of us gamers are in the in that lifestyle of, we read through everything.
Oh, right.
Yet don't get to play it.
Yeah. Yes.
So,
well, it's funny because, you know, we've told the story before, but the way Zach and I got together was on a Reddit forum where I think it was about 7C had just come out. And
it was my post.
It was your post, yeah.
It was my post. I had just purchased the core book and maybe one other book. Yeah. And I had pitched it to my gaming group at home, and they didn't want anything to do with it. So.
Yeah, sad.
So I went to the world of the internet. But
I had made a comment that when you love a game, you're usually stuck game mastering it, because it's up to you to bring it to your group
Yep.
And introduce
every
it.
Time. Every single time.
Yep. Every time.
Yeah. You're like, hey, this is a cool thing I've heard about. They're like, cool, when are you running it? I'm like,
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, it's kind of sad because I feel like there are some games. Blades in the Dark. We've talked about this one before.
Oh, yes.
I would love to play Blades in the Dark, but I don't feel like I would be the right game master for it.
I don't know, man. You do a lot of spy stuff, and Blades in the Dark is extremely, like, spy-focused, espionage-y. Sneak thief sort of thing, you know?
That is true. That is true. But it also has this kind of horror layer on it that I'm nervous about. I'm getting to the point where I might just have to give up and go for it. But, you know, it's, you know, I feel like there are games that fit people better as players than possibly as GMs.
Yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. That's a hard thing because I definitely love running the Star Wars system, but I have a hard time thinking of people I want to play because I get lost in thinking about the world and like the NPCs. Mm-hmm. You know, I think as a forever GM, as it seems to be, not always, but it feels like that. I do GM a lot and I love it. I do that because I do love running that game. It's hard to think about something that isn't, you know, an NPC as a character. Because when you start playing it and you get like two or three sessions in, you're like, yeah, this guy doesn't work because he wants to stay right here in his shop and do his thing.
Yeah.
Blades in the Dark is cool. I've just barely started picking into it. It was one of those that I saw recommended online, and I loved the book series, Lies of Locke Lamora. If you haven't read that.
Oh, yeah.
Highly suggest it. And they actually list it in their suggested reads in the book for Blades in the Dark. Very much has that feel to it from the little bit I've looked at it.
True.
So good.
Yeah, we've done some emulator work with it, with Blades in the Dark.
Emulator work?
Did we? I don't remember.
Oh, definitely.
Tell me about that.
Okay.
We built a character and we both went through. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, didn't actually play it. Just did some character creation and looking.
We
through
used
it that way.
What emulator did we use, Mark?
It was Roll20. Wasn't.
But didn't we use like a GM-less version and we did it through charts and stuff?
No, you're thinking of Ironsworn.
I am thinking of Ironsworn.
Isn't that the solo play? Ironsworn?
Yeah. You can do it with a group play, but no, I play a lot of that solo. That's a great solo game.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
That's another one I've seen and heard of, but haven't touched.
it's pretty good. I like your system. It's pretty easy to get your hands on and get to create a quick character and get in.
Yes.
It's a lot of fun. I liked it.
There's one similar to that solo player or different mechanic that I just recently heard about. I think it's called Alice is Missing. I'm trying to remember
exactly.
I've heard
about that.
It just recently came out and it's touted as a silent RPG. The players don't talk. Oh. You only use like text or some other form of communication like that. But I think you're still supposed to be in person. I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure how that whole works, but it sounds very different because not talking in an RPG, man.
Yeah.
Nope.
That's weird. Yeah,
that's strange. I'd be interested to take a look at that system. Definitely.
True.
Is it kind of, you know, general knowledge to us gamers that most of the time, I'm not going to say always because I'll sound like an asshole, but most of the time, crunch and narrative are almost opposites in a way. Like a narrative system is usually less crunchy, you know, in my experience. What do you guys think?
I think from what I've experienced, it seems to be that's an easy handle, and so therefore it gets used that way a lot. But it's not true across the board. I mean, because you can say, White Wolf is considered a very narrative system because it's just used D10s, simple mechanic, you know, and you can, whatever, if you can convince the GM, if it sounds cool, you go with it. As opposed to like Rollmaster, which has a chart for everything, and a chart for the chart, and a chart off the chart for the chart of the chart.
Yep.
That is way so much crunch, you know. I've had some of my most cool narrative games in a fairly crunchy system, and I've had some of my, you know, more confusing games in narrative systems that it just, there wasn't enough there. And so I think it's hard because it's a very easy handle to say this is a narrative system, and it's not going to be like what you're used to. You're not trudging through, you know, dungeons, and you're not worried about your level up and your experience and how many monsters you kill and how much treasure you loot or whatever. And so it's very easy to say that that's narrative and that's flexible because it's more about the person. But then you have Critical Role, which, man, I don't think they even know the system yet. Like, they're just acting. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Love it.
Right. No, it's improv class, right. You know?
Exactly.
I think a lot of it depends on where the crunch is,
yep.
too. If you get too micromanaging into your actions, then it does take over from the narrative. But if the crunch feeds the narrative, then that's really what it should be doing in the first place, in my opinion. Right.
In a perfect world.
Yeah.
Right.
But again, if you are more tactical, if you are more into the wargaming side of it, then, you know, that's what's going to kind of take away. It's going to become more tactical than narrative. I think that might be the real dividing line more than crunch and non-crunch.
Okay. I think this might pull us away from what we're talking about a little bit, but this fits in right here. Mm-hmm. The third topic I'd send you guys was like, what degree of realism is important in a game? And I think Absolutely. This fits right now because I've had, you know, a more narrative system where, you know, the GM wanted you to describe what you were doing in such a specific way that it pulled away from feeling like I'm role playing some cool hero that has skill sets I don't. And it had to be, what do I know and how can I use that and somehow impress the GM? And like, what level of realism is important? Is it important that I know that when I'm blocking this blade, I'm blocking with the forte of my rapier, and then I'm stepping forward in like a number seven defense parry before, as opposed to a number five? You know, like, is that important? Or can there be a mechanic to help cover that a little bit, but still aid in that role play?
I think we've talked about something similar to this in the past, and you know, I know Zach especially likes to use the, okay, you describe what's going on.
Yes.
Which, and we're talking about theater of the mind, ultimately, right. Whether you're in person or you're doing it online, this is all happening in our heads.
Yep.
So if I were going to go over to Zach's house, I don't get to choose what Zach's house looks like. Zach chose what Zach's house looked like. So if Logan were role-playing me going to Zach's house, should Logan decide what Zach's house looks like?
Yeah, okay. Yep.
Because that wouldn't, you know, because there's not a clear, you know, it's taking away from your experience of what I would experience.
Right.
Right.
On the other hand, because we're talking about this is all in your mind's eye, if a game master were to sit here and describe to you absolutely everything that's in Zach's house, not only would it take hours, but you'd forget, by the time you got to the end, you'd forget where he started, and you know, it wouldn't.
And you'd forget the point.
Entirely. You'd forget the point completely.
Wait, why was I at Zach's house?
Right.
So it's easier for you to just go in there and say, I want to pull the rug out from under him. Okay, there's a rug there. So we didn't discuss it, but if it's the story, and you know, so allowing that kind of quote unquote unrealistic participation in the world is something that, you know, it's not realism, but it does kind of facilitate the spirit of realism, I think.
Yeah, I think that assumptive play is definitely important. You know, I pulled the rug out from him. Well, you didn't know there was a rug there, so we should just go with that. That's cool.
Yeah.
But do you have to know what type of rug and where on the rug do you grab it? And how do the tassels get in your way or not? Like,
I think the simple answer is no.
No.
That's not so important.
Okay, that's fair.
But like, but sometimes, like, in our 7th C campaign, one of our characters very flashy and flamboyant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then him explaining things that way would totally be in character,
mm-hmm.
right?
You know what I mean? So, I guess it really just depends on the player and how involved they want to get with their character. But if it gets to the point where it takes away from the narrative or takes away from the scene,
yeah,
that it needs to be, you know, reined back a little bit, and you know, and everybody kind of has to be on the same page.
I think there does have to be some rationale here. If you're in an ancient tomb, there's not going to be a carpet for you to pull out from under their feet.
Right.
You have to use some logic.
It's right there. It looks like the floor because it's turned to dust. And as soon as you grab it, you fall on your butt. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's definitely key. You know, as especially with people who are new to roleplay as a thing, a lot of that weight always lays on the DM's shoulders or the narrator. You've got to describe things. You've got to help encourage them to try and do stuff. It's a hard balance because you want to make them like jump on it. I think the ideal situation is where they start narrating their own failures. That was actually a very common thing in the last Star Wars game I was running with this Fantasy Flight game was, cool, you rolled a despair. What went wrong? Tell me. You know, like, I don't have to decide that. I'm just setting up the bad guys. How did you screw yourself?
Yeah.
What went wrong?
Yeah, that's great.
I mean, that's not so uncommon for us because that's how 7C works.
Yes.
True.
So,
yeah, I think the spirit of 7C is definitely all towards that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Wasn't there a podcast called The Spirit of 7C back in the day? I don't know if anybody...
Maybe.
That's a deep cut. That's a real deep cut.
Yeah,
I think, like, official... Like, the official...
Yeah!
Creative crew behind it.
But if there isn't, there should be. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
There should be, and we're taking it.
There you go.
But yeah, that's not something that's uncommon because that's normal for us. And
right.
Because that's built into the game system. And that's an aspect, you know, another reason why I include people in the collaborative storytelling. Like, okay, what do you see? Like, tell me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That helps people's, you know, improv and gaming skills. It gets them involved in not only, you know, the scene, but kind of being creative.
But if they don't know the task at hand, that becomes hard. Like, let's say it's sailing. They're rolling into a storm. Cool. Describe to me what happens. I'm going to sail better, you know? So you got to think about how do we encourage that creativity without making them go and go on complete flatline mind blank because there's too many options.
And I think the way I do it kind of limits, I don't do that for every situation.
Right. No, you can't.
Like, all, you know, say, you know, they're entering a building. What does the interior look like?
Yes.
You know,
yep.
Smaller narrative elements, as opposed to the major narrative points that the GM should make up himself. In turn, I do.
Right.
Those minor details that might be less important to you as the GM, but maybe the visual details can excite your players a little bit more, you know, because they had a hand in creating them or
for sure
visualizing them.
True. But another aspect of this is the differing player experience. You mentioned sailing as an example.
Yeah.
Well, I used to own a sailboat. I actually taught sailing for a short time.
Nice.
I know about sailing, but player number two over here might have a higher sailing skill and not have that real world experience to put into their narrative of how they're attempting things.
But they want to. Mm-hmm. They want to feel they're that cool sea pirate, you know, that captain of the waves.
Exactly.
And in that case, everybody's seen Pirates of the Caribbean.
Right.
Okay.
So,
you know, actually that kind of brings up a point. Just because maybe they don't have real world knowledge doesn't mean they might not have media knowledge or literary knowledge. So there are other places people can pull this inspiration from.
Well, and that kind of goes back to core of this question is, you know, realism. We've all seen the movie where the guy pulls out a gun and shoots the lock off a door and kicks it in.
And then we've seen the Mythbusters episode.
Exactly right. Yes. So there's an example of, do we go with the narrative, the cinematic, this is what happens in the movies, so we're going to keep it moving, or bog it down with the realism of saying, no, that doesn't work, sort of thing.
And that goes to your setting, because 7C to me is extremely cinematic realism. You should be able to shoot the lock off the thing. When there's built-in rules, I can't remember if this is in second edition, but it definitely was in first edition. It doesn't matter how far you fall down, as long as you hit a tarp or a person, you're fine.
Yes.
That's insane.
Yeah. Yep.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Falling damages, you land on something nice. Yeah.
As opposed to like an end of the world sort of, you know, survivor situation. I think there is like a how does the world end role play system out there. I can't remember the name of it, but it was like they had like five different books and each one was a different way of the world ending. One by zombies, one by, you know, elder gods, that sort of thing. And it was extremely like realistic. We're going to survive. And it wasn't cinematic. Like, oh, cool. You forgot to grab candles before you left your house. Now you have no light. Sorry, there's no finding it. Like, you got to go to another house and try and find it where there's more zombies.
Right, exactly.
Very cool.
Well, I think we could talk all day.
Seriously.
True.
I'm pretty sure we could.
You guys are fun to talk about. We just keep, like, going on these trails, and I keep cutting in. And I'm like, oh, but this idea, oh, my gosh. And I'm, like, too excited. It's good.
That's what it's all about.
That's what we do all every Sunday. Every Sunday, Logan.
Love it.
We do that.
Love it.
But... Logan, it has been a blast talking with you today.
Well, thank you.
I had fun. Mark, did you have fun?
I had a great time.
You two have been awesome. I've had a lot of fun. Thank you.
Good.
Mark, thank you for joining me on this Sunday like you do always.
Sure.
Logan, thank you for joining me on this Sunday.
And thank you for having me, Zach and Mark.
And I look forward to the next one.
And that's it for this episode of Tabletop Radio Hour. Like always, you can find this episode on soundcloud.com/tabletopradiohour and on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at tabletopcast if you have any questions or comments. You can join us over on facebook.com/tabletopradiohour for regular updates. We also have an email address that is tabletopradiohour@gmail.com. Our website, tabletopradiohour.wordpress.com. You can find information about our Patreon page on our website. I want to thank you all for listening, and keep rolling 20s.